Your New York weekend is not complete without the Joan Hamburg Show on 77 WABC.
Welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show. And of course, we celebrate everything on Saturdays, beginning at 2 o'clock. And you know, we don't only have one podcast, we have two podcasts. And both can be, you can go right to them by going to the OGPodcastNetwork.org. And you want to hear more of our guests? You want to meet guests you've never heard of? Well, then I would go to Let Me Tell You. But every single week, we put up all our wonderful interviews and information also on our regular podcast. You do the same thing. Go to the OG Podcast Network, the Joan Hamburg Show, and there it is. You can also access us through Facebook and Twitter. We're available. So many of you send me messages with information, and I'm always happy to reply. So this particular week, right ahead, I want you to meet Dr. Mark Hyman. I first met Dr. Hyman when I started broadcasting from Canyon Ranch in the Berkshires. He was co-medical director. This guy really had his finger on it. These people were the first to talk about flaxseed, were the first to talk about things that really change your life and your health. And of course, Dr. Hyman went on to become a friend and medical consultant sometimes to the Clintons, to the Obamas. He's a very interesting guy. And his latest book on what should I eat, food, was really eye-opening because every week we hear something else. Don't eat meat. It's going to do you in. Eat yogurt. Eat this. Don't touch bacon. The chemicals will destroy you. Well, Dr. Hyman points out most of this is fallacy. Nothing to do with fact. And he tells you, realistically, you could eat bacon almost every day in your life and your percentage of getting something is negligible. But it's more than that. It's really like a dear friend patting you on the shoulder and saying, hey, it's okay. This is what you can eat. There are only a couple of things you should eat. And a lot of those things are with pesticides. Like, you know what one of the worst things to eat is? And our government also came out with a list. Apples. Unless you buy organic apples, there is very little way you can get rid of the pesticides. Strawberries, nisht, they're covered with pesticides unless you get organic. So there is something to getting organic. And now in every supermarket, they have organic sections. And especially when it comes to fruit where we eat often the outside and the peel, some things you'll see don't matter, but a lot of them are really contaminated and you want to be careful. And it's the same thing. He says, you know, beef is not the villain. If you buy beef that is grass-fed, like chickens, I mean, you want to eat good food. That's what it's all about. You don't want to fill your body with all this junk. Anyway, I love him, and he's a very interesting guy. So he's going to be along, too. And then I have another guest, very interesting woman, who, you know, we all, no matter how old we are or how young, women, we're the best little girls. We want to please everyone. It's part of the DNA. And my guest was literally falling apart, like having a nervous breakdown, because how many people can you please? If you grow up, you get married, you have your kids, you want to be the best mother, the best wife, or you're sort of getting hostile because you're coming home from work, you're doing everything. It's, you can't do it. And she explains how you can get through your life in really good style. And it was a hard lesson for her to learn, and she's a sharer. So you're going to hear about that too. Plus, with the kind of information I love to give. I had a big week. There's a lot of theater opening. And by the way, we are going to do a live audience show right before the Tonys. So, you know, that fills up so soon. We've got to get right on that. But we'll tell you where in a couple of days. I went to see Carousel. I've been to see almost everything, and I love Three Tall Women. I told you it was beautifully done. Angels in America broke your heart, but definitely worth seeing. Carousel. I'm telling you, it nourished the soul. Jesse Mueller plays the famous Julie Jordan. Renee Fleming, the great opera star, is in this show. The songs are everything I love. Everyone in that theater was singing, humming, crying. The acting, everything was magnificent. What a gift. And I am one of the first people to say, it's outrageous that theater tickets are hundreds of dollars. Who can go to the theater? Tourists come in maybe once a year. But this show is worth every nickel. I'm telling you, I'm going to see it again. And I'm buying tickets for my kids because they never saw it. And they were like, I don't know, do we really want to see Carousel? Yes, you do. And then I mentioned on my podcast, let me tell you, that to celebrate a cousin's birthday, we went to one of the early John George restaurants that had been closed and restored, recently opened JoJo's, at 160 East 64th Street, a townhouse. We had the most wonderful dinner. Really delicious. And not break the bank. Not cheap, but worth every nickel. Another great experience. And it's not so easy to find when it comes to dining in New York. But I love JoJo's. We don't have enough restaurants like that in the 60s, 70s, 80s. There's a restaurant that in our neighborhood I love, Ilio's on 2nd Avenue and 84th Street. Oh my gosh, they have chicken scarpiella. That is one of my favorite things. And they make it better than anyone in New York. It's little bite-sized pieces of chicken on the bone with garlic. It's just delicious. And they have little homemade, I call them mommy's cookies, because my mom used to make these cookies that she would roll, put them in the refrigerator, and then slice them and bake them. She was a great baker, and we love them. And Ilio's has that kind of cookie. The only problem is if they don't know you, you'll probably be seated in the back. But the food is really good. It's like L.A. in New York. Always packed, lots of fun people there. So I think that's something else you're going to enjoy. And then I wanted to mention wonderful actor from TV, the theater, film, Tony LoBianco. He was in The French Connection. He's going to perform a show called The Little Flower. It's a one-man show about the life of Fiorello LaGuardia. People have loved this show, and it's taking place at the TVN Theater in New York at 111 15th Street, right off Union Square. There's only a few tickets for the one-man extravaganza, so I know it's something you're going to want to see. And the performance is the launch of Heroes Blue, which is a spirituality-based program that saves the lives of the nation's police, who, believe it or not, are at high risk for suicide and have PTSD, depression, a lot of problems. So this is a wonderful non-denominational organization. So try to put this on your calendar. Tony LoBianco and In the Little Flower.
Stay healthy with the top health specialist in New York with Joan Hamburg, live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
I'm really excited because an old friend of mine, Dr. Mark Hyman, grew up to be like the big guru. Who knew when he was just a wee boy? And I met him at Canyon Ranch. He is now the director of the Cleveland Clinic Center for Functional Medicine. He is the founder of the Ultra Wellness Center. He writes books. He works with presidents. He's changed all of our lives. And his latest food, What the Heck Should I Eat, is I like all his books. This is probably his best book. You know how every day you guys email us, you call us, you can't take the conflicting messages. I can't eat eggs. I can eat eggs. Meat is going to give you cancer. No, meat is good for you. Fat, carbs, liver.
What the heck?
What the heck? And liver. I grew up with sautéed chicken livers and onions over rice or mashed potatoes. You, considerably younger, grew up, and then suddenly it became, oh, horrible, you'll kill yourself. You can't eat organ meats.
Yeah.
And yet Mark tells you what's real and what's not real. My husband almost fainted when I said that oatmeal you eat every morning, forget about it. And that banana you put in it? No. So explain, Dr. Mark.
Well, it's always compared to what, right? Oatmeal compared to a donut.
Right, or even a bagel with cream cheese.
Yes, it is improvement for sure. But, you know, we are confused, Joan, and it's because we have so many competing messages out there. Yes, in the media, but also science is conflicted, and we have competing sciences. Marion Nestle is writing a book, which is coming out next fall. She's the NYU nutritionist, amazing woman. She wrote Food Politics, Soda Politics, and she's writing a book about the corruption of nutrition science by the food industry that promotes all this science that discredits a lot of the mainstream science, which shows that processed food and sugar is bad. For example, if soda companies fund research whether soda causes obesity, guess what they find? It doesn't have any connection, right? If the Dairy Council funds research on dairy, guess what? It's the nature's perfect food, but it's really not.
You were the guy I remember who many, many years ago talked about dairy and about milk. Mm. And I remember so many people in the nutrition world said, you don't drink milk?
Yeah.
Your bones are going to fall apart.
That's right.
And you were the one who said, please.
Right.
You know,
give us a break. Yeah, we know that, you know, from the research that the government's recommendations to drink 3 glasses of milk a day for adults and 2 for kids has no scientific basis. In fact, research shows that increasing your milk intake may increase the risk of fractures. It increases obesity in kids when they drink skim milk. It may increase cancer risk. It causes gut issues and a whole host of other things.
But tell me, why... You know, I buy, for my husband, who has his cereal every day, drinks like a gallon of milk a week. Why skim milk is not the preferred milk?
Well, we had a huge push against fat. And there was some very poor weak science that seemed to link fat with heart disease, but it didn't prove cause and effect. But that didn't stop the government from saying we should all be eating a low-fat diet. And we followed that advice since 1980 and ended up as the fattest, most diabetic nation on the planet because we are all told to eat 6 to 11 servings of bread, rice, cereal, and pasta a day and cut the fat. And that led to the removal of milk fat, which is why we got skim milk. And it turns out skim milk doesn't have the fat in it, which actually helps you feel full. And kids who drink more skim milk actually are more obese because they're eating more and hungrier all day.
That's really interesting.
And by the way, saturated fat, the whole idea that saturated fat is bad, has been questioned. And the science is now shifting because we have better science that shows in randomized trials that it's not a problem. In fact, the dietary guidelines have improved in saying we should not worry about cholesterol anymore, we should not worry about total fat, but they still say to cut saturated fat, and that's because they haven't really looked at all the science. And Congress mandated the National Academy of Science to review the way we come up with our guidelines and found that they're corrupt, there's undue industry influence, and that they ignored huge swaths of science, particularly around saturated fat and lower carbohydrate diets. So now they're going back and looking at all that, and I hope we're going to have a revision in 2020.
Well, and we certainly need it. And how about the story? How many years have I felt guilty that I can't eat breakfast? I just can't. I can't get up in the morning really early and make anything go down except for coffee.
Coffee.
And Lexi brings me my burned, overpriced Starbucks.
You know, the thing is that coffee is the biggest source of antioxidants in the American diet.
Oh, hooray.
And that's not actually a good thing. It means that they're not getting antioxidants from anywhere else, like their veggies and fruits. But yeah, no, in fact, what you're talking about is skipping breakfast. And there's some interesting research now on what we call fasting mimicking diets, or we call intermittent fasting. And we know the only thing that helps extend longevity by a third in animal models is calorie restriction. But But that's no fun because you end up being hungry all the time. So we've found that if you actually don't eat after dinner, let's say dinner 6 or 7 and don't eat till for 14 hours, basically sleep the whole night and then eat maybe 11 or 12, that it stimulates a process in the body that reverses aging. It stimulates your mitochondria, reduces inflammation, increases antioxidants, increases stem cells, and actually helps reverse diabetes, improve insulin, builds muscle mass. It's really impressive. So for some people who are not, you know, underweight, who don't have cancer, who have other issues that are maybe obviate that, like pregnancy, this can be an interesting model for people to try. Basically, it's just not eating after dinner and eating lunch the next day.
I love that. I hope it gets rid of my bad neck. You think that could happen?
Your bad neck? I don't know. That's got other issues there.
Well, we got to deal with that. I'm talking to Dr. Mark Hyman. Food. What the heck should I eat? You are going to be so shocked because all the myths that we believe turn out not to be true.
Yeah.
And think about who's behind a lot of these studies. I went into a butcher that opened on the west side, a little restaurant butcher shop that got a lot of press. And they were saying that after a report came out that meat was going to give us cancer.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Of course.
You write about it.
Of course.
And people stopped
buying meat.
And they started buying even more chicken.
Oy.
You say,
oy.
Exactly, oy, not true. Chicken is not better for you than meat.
Well, the current chicken we have is very different, right? It's made in factory farms.
We want it cheap.
They fill it full of antibiotics. They arsenic in the feed. They promote growth of these animals in ways that are unnatural. And they're in horrible, inhumane conditions. And they feed them things that they're not their natural diet. They have high levels of omega-6 fats. So they're not better. In fact, we've dramatically reduced our meat consumption and dramatically increased our chicken consumption over the last 50 years.
So it's not so good.
No. And the thing about meat is it's a longer story, but the science around meat is very shaky. A lot of them are association studies, don't prove cause and effect. And they're not very strong associations. And often when the studies were done, the meat eaters in the studies didn't care about their health because the people knew in that era that meat was bad, so they didn't eat meat if they wanted to be healthy. Only the people who didn't care about their health, who smoked more, drank more, didn't exercise, ate fruits and vegetables, didn't eat fruits and vegetables, those are the ones who ate meat. And when you look at the cancer data, it's not meat, it's processed meat. Bacon, deli meats, all that stuff, right? It has nitrates and other things. So that may be an association, but it's very small. They go, it's a 20% increase. Well, what does that mean? One, it's an increase from a background rate of 5% in the population for getting colon cancer to 6%. That's a 1% absolute increase, but a 20% relative increase.
Over a lifetime.
Over a lifetime. 4 pieces of bacon a day your whole life increase your risk from 5 to 6%. Now,
nothing.
If you want to have a piece of bacon once in a while, I don't think it's going to kill you, but I think we want to be smart about looking at the research and saying these are association studies. They're weak, and if you look at association studies that showed a big deal, like smoking, there was a 20 or 30-fold increase, not a 0.2 increase, right? So it's in research studies that don't show cause and effect, like correlation studies like we have for meat, you have to see a 2-fold increase at least, or 3-fold increase.
And we're not seeing.
We're seeing a 0.2 increase.
Which is nothing. And if you want to eat bacon, and why not? Bacon is a delicious thing to eat.
I met someone who's a baconitarian. They're vegan except for bacon.
That's so funny. I know a young woman in the entertainment business who is a vegan except for spare ribs.
Spare-ribitarian.
Anyway, you can go to Nyman Farm and get bacon and get any of those things you love without nitrates in it. So, and vitamin C, is that true that will cut the, if you...
Yeah, vitamin C will help reduce the adverse effects, yeah.
And now people, of course, are getting, we're told we're going to have decent weather for a moment.
Thank God.
They're going to turn their grills on, and you can grill meat, but I read in the book, I'm talking to Mark Hyman, Food, What the Heck Should I Eat, that if you marinate your meat, you have a better shot at killing all the bad stuff.
Absolutely. So what happens is when you heat meat, it creates these toxic compounds called heterocyclic amines, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, big words, but essentially they're cancer-causing compounds. And same thing happens, by the way, when you grill vegetables. It's not specific to meat.
It's the grilling process.
And if you marinate it with acidic things like vinegar or lemon, you can actually mitigate some of the development of these products. So it's safe. But I wouldn't be grilling stuff, charcoal, all the time.
Right.
It's probably not a great idea. Occasionally, it's fine.
How about your gas grill?
Same.
It's the same thing. Yeah. You mean it's the high heat?
Yeah, high heat.
So is it how much we eat or what we eat?
Great question. So everybody listening out there probably thinks this, which is that if you want to lose weight, you should eat less and exercise more.
Right.
That's what our government tells us. That's what the food industry tells us.
And
all that moderation.
It.
That's what nutritionists, doctors, all our professional public health organizations tell us, eat less, exercise more. That is an old idea that needs to be thrown in the wastebasket because it's not true. And if you ask a fifth grader, is eating 1,000 calories of donuts the same as eating 1,000 calories of broccoli? They're going to go, no. But that's exactly what we're being told. And here's the deal. Different calories act differently in your body because of your metabolism. In a vacuum, yes, they're the same. But in your body, they're different. And they have different instructions. So food is not just calories. It's information. And when you eat starch and sugar calories, it raises a hormone called insulin. That's a fat storage hormone. It makes you hungry. It slows your metabolism. When you cut out the starch and sugar and you increase the fat, and you can't increase the fat unless you cut out the sugar, because that's
right.
deadly, call that sweet fat, you actually stimulate your metabolism. You cut out hunger, and you help the fat get out of your fat cells, and you speed up your metabolism. And if you look at studies where they looked at people eating the same calories, same people, different times eating the same calories of protein and, I mean, of fat, high fat versus very high carb, the high fat group burned 300 calories more a day doing nothing.
How interesting.
Yeah. Which would solve the whole obesity epidemic.
I like that. We're going to do that. Dr. Mark Hyman in his new book, Food, What the Heck Should I Eat? Just a question. We had talked about this a while ago. With so many Americans on statins, cholesterol-lowering drugs, isn't that one of the reasons we see an increase in diabetes? Didn't I read or did you tell me in your youth, which you are still in, that statins definitely will work.
Yes.
And they're impressive. However,
yes,
we pay a price for
everything.
Well,
statins have a role in people who've had heart attacks, what we call secondary prevention, meaning after you've already had a heart attack or you have multiple high risk factors,
right, take one.
There's a benefit. But there's also risks, right? It affects your muscles. It has effect of potentially increasing diabetes. For primary prevention, that's preventing a heart attack if you've never had one, that's 75% of the prescriptions written. There's very little evidence that it works. In fact, there's a lot of evidence that it may not be helpful at all. And there is a downside. Women in the Women's Health Initiative, a randomized controlled trial, the best kind of evidence you get, was a $1 billion study. They found that it was a 48% increase in type 2 diabetes with
statins.
Women who took statins.
Wow. I was going to say, I know more people thin, fit,
yeah,
on a statin who are taking that, what do you call that medicine that they give for pre-diabetes?
Metformin. Yeah.
So then I read something the other day in some journal that metformin actually may prolong life.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
So it gives you diabetes, but you live longer with it.
Well, metformin helps diabetes.
Yeah.
Statins actually...
I mean, statins give you
can
that.
May cause diabetes, right. And I think that, you know, the reason metformin works is because it fixes the main reason we have heart attacks, cancer, diabetes, and dementia, which it improves your insulin sensitivity.
Uh-huh.
This is really something that is a big epidemic. It's something that doctors don't test for, don't look for, but it's the biggest single driver of all chronic disease. And it's when you eat starch and sugar, your insulin levels go up, and that's the big deal. And that makes you hungry, makes you store belly fat, affects your brain, shrinks your brain, causes stress hormones in your body to increase, causes cancer to grow. It's not a good thing. So people can enjoy starch and sugar as a drug. Think of it as a recreational treat. If you like tequila, you're not going to have it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Right. You'll
but
have
that's
a
what
shot
we do.
Every now and
right.
then. Mark, in this book, you come up with a new diet idea. We've seen the paleo diet. You know, we have a lot of diets. You come up, I think I was pronouncing it wrong. I was calling it the pagan
No, it's not
diet.
The pagan diet.
It's the... What is it?
It's a joke. It's called the Pegan diet.
Right, the Pegan.
The last thing we need is another diet. What I did was poke fun at the extremes of paleo and vegan. Now, if you listen to one side, if you're a vegan, if you eat meat, you're going to die. And if you're paleo, it says if you eat grains and beans and starch, you're going to die if you're going to be a vegan. Right. So they can't both be right. So what is the truth about science? And I realized that there is a set of principles that everybody pretty much agrees on that are similar to both groups, with a few exceptions.
grains, meat and grains and beans, pretty much. And dairy, they both agree, is not a great food. They both agree that we should be reducing sugar and starch in high glycemic foods.
With.
We should be both eating a plant-rich diet, meaning not plant-based, but lots of plants. 75% of your plate should be veggies. We should eat lots of good fats, right? We should eat with things like nuts and seeds and avocados and olive oil and fish oil and even grass-finished saturated fat.
Beef.
Yeah. And we should eat lots of nuts and seeds, and we should, if we're going to eat grains, we should only eat whole grains. If we eat beans, we should eat whole beans. And we should actually try to reduce gluten because that there's a lot of issues with that, and we can talk about that. And these are just simple principles. And we should also eliminate anything that's not food in our diet, basically additives, pesticides, herbicides,
right.
hormones, antibiotics, GMOs in uncharted territory. We're basically executing the largest uncontrolled experiment on the human population ever with these foods. And they don't necessarily benefit us in terms of better yields and reduced pesticide use, as we've learned. So I think we have to sort of look at these basic principles, say these are things that are flexible, that are adaptable, that anybody can follow, and that will lead you to good health.
I'm talking to Dr. Mark Hyman, and in his new book, he clears up a lot of myths, is going to make you feel much better, and he's got tons of recipes in the book for all kinds of good things, chilies and stews and
desserts.
And how about that blueberry ice cream deal?
Yeah.
I love that. You use coconut milk in that.
That's great. That's my best favorite dessert. I say, I'm making ice cream. I'm going to go in the kitchen. I sneak in the kitchen. I say, I'm going to make ice cream.
Berries.
I use frozen blackberries, a can of coconut milk, a splash of vanilla.
And that's it,
And
right?
I throw it in the Vitamix. And like I come out with these parfait ice cream. I'm like, how did you make ice cream so fast? And they eat it. And they're like, this is amazing. And they have
right?
no idea what they're missing.
But is coconut a nut? Like, I'm married to a man who's allergic to all nuts and seafood. But I don't think of coconut as a nut.
It can be something that people are allergic to, but it's actually had a lot of bad press lately because it was the newest basically magic food.
And
then the American Heart Association said, no, this has got saturated fat, it's bad. But it was guilt by association. First of all, the whole theory of saturated fat is in question. Second of all, they said, well, saturated fat is high in coconut, so saturated fat is bad, it raises LDL, we should cut coconut. There's no data that show that. There's not a single study that shows coconut causes heart attacks. It just was an assumption that I don't think is based in fact.
So, read food, you're going to feel much better. You can go back to eating organ meats from your childhood. It's not going to do you in. And remember, it's the way you eat that is really very important and can also change things like climate. I wish we had more time. Mark will visit us again. But get the book because it's like having Mark in your living room. Thank you, Dr. Hyman.
Welcome.
I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC.
New York culture with real New Yorkers. Joan Hamburg, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
You know, when I was very young and working and bringing up my children, I was filled with guilt all the time. I wasn't home. I was home. I wasn't doing enough. I was doing too much. I literally would make myself crazy, race home, pay my babysitter. We didn't even have nannies. Well, who could afford them? I'd pay my babysitter so she could pay her babysitter. And that's the way it was. So all those years later, Erin Falconer comes along, and Erin is editor-in-chief and co-owner of a self-improvement site called Pick the Brain. She's got more than 1.8 million page views, monthly page views. She comes along and writes this book called How to Get Done. And she shares the story of her own life and what happened to her. She was the best little girl, grew up in Canada, a star of everything, and decided to change her life a little and move to L.A., and I'm going to let her tell you. So you were very open, Erin, about sharing everything that even you were doing. And the subtitle, you say, why women need to stop doing everything so they can achieve anything.
Yeah. Yes, and it's so funny as you recount, you know, your early years, your career. It's funny, I found myself feeling the exact same way all these years later. And so basically, in a nutshell, I was on a fast track to become, you know, a super lawyer. Everything I did, I had to be the best. And, you know, I was constantly going. When a little voice inside my head said, hey, you know, you've always been into writing and stand-up comedy and stuff. I think you should give this creative vision a try. So I headed down to Los Angeles and, you know, kind of toiled around here for 5 or 6 years, and things were going okay. And all of a sudden, the recession of 2008 hit, and I found myself with no car. My house was about to be foreclosed upon. My visa was up, and I was going to have to go back to Canada. And I really had a kind of crisis moment, literally a crying in the fetal position on the bathroom floor moment. And I was petrified because I was going to have to go back to Canada with a big I failed sign on my written on my forehead. And I said, how did this happen? I listened to this voice inside my head, and yet here I am in pieces. And so in a last ditch effort, I sent out a million resumes on Craigslist, and I only got one response, which to be a copywriter for $15 an hour for a very new self-improvement website. It was 2008, and blogs and websites, you know, of this nature were very, very new. And I decided to give that a try, make the absolute best of it that I could, even though it was not the writing job that I'd come to Los Angeles for. And again, long story short, I was able to turn that $15 an hour copywriting job into a very, very successful self-improvement blog. I co-founded another company called Leaf TV. We raised $1 million. Everything was going really, really great. And out of the blue, a New York agent hit me up. This is now 12 years after I moved to Los Angeles to become a writer, and hit me up and said, Erin, we'd love you to write a book. And I was like, oh my God, my dream has come true. Somebody's actually going to pay me to write this. Unbelievable. I said, absolutely. What do you want the book to be on? And they said, well, we want it to be on about you. And I was gobsmacked. And I said, what are you talking about? Who would read that book? And I got up. They said, well, you've done this, and you've done this, and you've done this, and you've accomplished this. And when I got off the phone, I had this moment where I sat back and reflected, and I said, oh, my goodness, I have done some stuff that's worth talking about. I have done some stuff that's important. And when I walked into my office the next morning, I looked around at all the great, strong women that I have had the fortune of working with day in and day out. And we all seem to be suffering from the same kind of disease where it's like we're going, but we're not stepping back to appreciate it, to enjoy it, to learn from it. And so what's the point, I thought to myself. And it was in that moment that I was like, wait a second, I think there's a book here, because we've got all these women doing so much stuff, and with the internet, and now you can maximize your productivity times 1,000. But for what? Because at the end of the day, we're all feeling exhausted and unfulfilled and like mice on a wheel, and that's not what life's about. And so I started to kind of look into that, and that's where kind of what the genesis of where the book started.
And you point out in your new book, Erin, that it took you, like you said, you've been in L.A. those years. It took you a while to really figure out what you want, along with what do women really want. And now, in addition to the whole digital age and world, you're also dealing with a whole new phase, the Me Too movement. I mean, the world is changing
Absolutely.
So fast.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a very important point, what you just mentioned. So generally, productivity and what people deem is if you're being productive, is how many hours you put in a day and then how much you've accomplished at the end of that day. But there's no real consideration on what you want. There's no personal voice in that. And so for me, in my whole thing is that, especially for women, we have to redefine what productivity, what that word actually really means for us. And so the first step is to sit down with yourself and ask yourself, what do you want? What makes you happy? What are you good at? Not what people think you should do, not what you think you should do. That's where I think a lot of the unhappiness is coming from, is that we're on this course, these fast tracks that we haven't even really decided consciously to be on. We're kind of going with the flow and you know, again, it's about what we think we should be doing as opposed to really checking in with what we want.
But how do you reconcile? How do you reconcile with what you want and with reality? If you're, let's say you're a young lawyer and you're lucky enough to get a job today in a corporate firm, it can't really be what you want if you want to stay there. I look at the young people working here. Some of them have three or four jobs during this changing time. And boy, they wish they could have what they want. But how do you make that work with reality?
Right. Well, I think there's two parts. First of all, just to the law example, I was on a fast track to be a lawyer, right? And I don't know why I thought that was a good idea, but I was like, I'm going to be a lawyer. And so what that would have meant for me, the amount of hours, exactly what you're talking about, I feel like the first thing is a lot of people are doing these careers because they think they should. And I think you have to be honest with yourself. Is this really what I want to be doing? So that's the first step. If you take the time and you assess, yes, wait, I do really want to be a lawyer, right? I've thought about it. This is what I'm good at. This is what I want to do. Then what you have to do, and I talk about this in the book, is that people are not really conscious right now. They're just going about how they're actually spending your time. And so I talk about in the book about doing a 7-day time track challenge where you literally write down what you're doing every single day for 7 days from the time you get up to the time you go to bed. And at the end of that 7 days, I guarantee you will be shocked to see how much time you are giving away to the things that don't matter to you. So being a corporate lawyer and getting your foot in the door and making a name for yourself in those first 5, 6, 7 years in a law firm is the most important thing to you. When you look at the end of that, when you have done that seven-day time challenge, and you look how much time you're giving away that's not focused on that goal, even if you're in the office for 16 hours a day, you will be surprised to find that you are not using your time as efficiently as you can be. And so I think that the idea is to get very conscious and very present about how you're spending your time and also who you're spending your time with, because there are the people that bring you up and help really build up your energy. And then there, you know, we all have those friends or those people in our lives that deplete your energy. And you see their name on the call display when your phone rings and you go, oh, and you have like a visceral reaction of like, oh my God, but you take the call anyways. Women specifically are prone to doing this. So it's about saying, hey, if this is what I want to do and I want to really burn the midnight oil and be the best lawyer I can be, you've got to analyze how you're spending the rest of your time and who you're spending your time with so that you can really be focused on that and not totally deplete your energy. So at the end of an 80-hour work week, you don't want to just crawl into bed and not get up for 48 hours.
Right. Well, and as you point out, you have to learn to say no. So what does success look like to you?
Well, success to me is, number one, I talk a lot of self-improvement books, a lot of self-development books are always talking about happiness and fulfillment. And those are great. And those are great things to go for. But I find those to be very esoteric and not, you can't really pinpoint to what that means for you. So I talk a lot about energy. I mean, even you've just heard me talk about it now, because that's something that right now, if you ask yourself, what's my energy like? I've got full of energy, or I'm feeling, you know, low energy, or I've got no energy, I'm drained. So for me, and that's a real litmus test for if there's balance in your life and if you're going in the right direction. And so ideally you want to be able to be doing things that are, again, filling up those energy coffers as opposed to depleting them. And the more you're doing things that are really in tune to your own truth and to your own moral values and to exact, you know, as clearly representative of who you are, the more successful, the more energy you're going to have, and the more fulfilled you're going to be. And that's really what it's about. It's about feeling good and feeling good in your skin and having enough energy for yourself and for the people you really love and really matter to you. And I think that's at the end of your life is going to feel pretty, what I would call a big success.
Erin Falconer, How to Get Done, Why Women Need to Stop Doing Everything So They Can Achieve Anything. All the best to you, Erin. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC.